Think for a moment on your favorite comfort food. Your favorite comfort food. One of my favorite comfort foods is roast beef and mashed potatoes with good brown gravy. Who likes that? Or how about a glass of milk and a big chocolate chip cookie? Isn't that like wonderful comfort food? Or who likes a big bowl of ice cream in the evening? Good comfort food? Am I making you hungry yet? Or there's the classic peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Isn't that like the best comfort food? It sticks to your ribs. In the gospel, Jesus says, "Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life. And whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me and I in them." Jesus is saying to us, "I am your comfort food. I am your spiritual food. I am your grace and energy food." Everyone who comes to Mass, we come to do two things. First, we come to listen to the words of God, to chew on them, to digest them, to think about them, to internalize them. We come to listen to the words of Jesus and take them to heart. And then we come to eat the comfort food of Jesus, his body and his blood, his food, which leads us where? To eternal life. Who wants to sit at the banquet table of eternal life? It's all comfort food and no calories. The spiritual food of Jesus energizes us to live and to love in the Spirit of Jesus, to seek and to serve in the Spirit of Jesus, to be graced by the goodness of Jesus, to be strengthened and inspired, to give with compassion in the Spirit of Jesus. That's why we come to dine on him. That's why we come to receive him. That's why we come to listen and to learn from him. The comfort of Jesus energizes us to do what? To be people of great love, to serve, to be empowered to serve, to be enabled to sacrifice for the good of others. Like peanut butter and jelly sticks to our ribs and makes us feel good, Jesus sticks with us. He leaves us full of grace. He fills us with holy power and energy. He fills us with the sweet spirit of compassion. He fills us with a desire to do good and to be good. We know when Jesus is in us, we give thanks. We give thanks with our words of prayer and our words of praise. And then we go out and do good in his name, because that's what happens to us when we take Jesus in and live him in love. We share him in gratitude, and we witness him to others with our good actions. So as you heard at the beginning of Mass, this is our mission appeal weekend, when we take up a collection to do good in the Spirit of Jesus. To help us to do good in the Spirit of Jesus, we not only receive him, but we share him. And we work to bring his loving comfort to those in need. So today we welcome John Drake from Jackson, just down the road, who will talk to us about the Lynn Gap Children's Foundation and how they run an orphanage to take care of children in the Philippines. So please give John a warm St. Joseph welcome.
Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I want to thank Father Brendan for the invitation to come here today. You guys have got a beautiful church. This is a fabulous place. As he said, my wife Judy in the second pew there and I are from Jackson, just down the road, so this wasn't a very far for us today at all. And until a few years ago, I was a senior officer with Consumers Energy and CMS Energy. You may have heard of us. And this was during a time when we were expanding internationally. At our peak, we had projects in 26 different countries around the world. And I was the senior human resource officer. And so I'm the one that they would always put on an airplane and send out to figure out how would we do business in some of the countries where we were going to be working. As I said, we were in 26 different countries. And it was a great job. I absolutely loved it because I got to travel a lot. I got to meet a lot of people and learn a lot of different cultures and so on. In fact, if you look in the dictionary up for world's greatest job, there's probably a picture of me because I loved it so much. But before you get really excited, you have to understand that they don't build power plants or gas pipelines in beautiful, exotic locations. They sent me to some of the worst places that you can possibly imagine. But no matter where I went, wherever I went in the world, I always happened to see children. And in a lot of times, these children don't seem to be doing very well in some of these third world countries. In fact, if you've ever traveled internationally, you've probably experienced a situation where kids will come up and they'll tap on the window of the car and do this. You ever seen that? Tap on the car. So what do you do? What do you do when that happens? Well, I think what most people do and what I always did is you just don't make eye contact. And I think subconsciously we think if we don't make eye contact with them, they don't see us, we don't see them, so we can just ignore the situation and go on about our business. And that's what I always tried to do, was just not make eye contact. But I knew they were there, and I would have liked to have helped them if I could. But, you know, I'm only one person, and I've got a big job to do, so I just didn't make eye contact. Well, all of that changed for me on February 27th, to be specific, of 2002. CMS Energy and Consumers Energy had purchased a power plant on the island of Cebu in the Philippines. And so I had been going there for approximately 10 years, trying to help keep the project going. And it was on February 27th that the company decided that we didn't want to be a big international energy company anymore. So what we're going to do is we're going to sell all of our plants and projects around the world. So John, get on an airplane and go to all these places and help put the deal together to sell the projects and, you know, help the employees to know what would happen and so on. So it was in this capacity that I was in town, and we had done the deal, everything was done, and I was leaving the very next day. I'm never coming back to the Philippines. We sold it, everything was done, I'm leaving, never coming back. But one of the things that we always tried to do whenever we had a project somewhere is we tried to do something to thank the community for letting us do business there. So what we had done is we had given the school system 16 computers to add to the school system's network. Now, this was 2002, so computers were pretty common here, but over there, especially in the provinces, it was really something new. In fact, when we added those 16 computers to their network, that brought their network up to a grand total of 16. So it was a very, very big deal. And the mayor wanted some publicity, so she came to me and she asked, would I be willing to go with her to all the locations where these computers are going to be used to do some publicity photos and so on. Well, I'm not leaving till the next day, so I said, sure, I'll be happy to. So we got in the car, and we're riding along, and all of a sudden she turns to me, and she says, now, you're the orphan guy, aren't you? I'm the orphan guy? Why would you ask? Why do I look like an orphan? I feel like an orphan, but do I look like one? And why would you ask me that? And she says, well, we have a project here in Toledo City that's in desperate need of renovation. Would you be willing to renovate it and run it for us? Sure, I can do that. I mean, this is on the other side of the planet Earth. There's different laws, different customs, different language, different everything. And I'm not even good with kids. So why would you ask me that? Well, she had checked me out, and she knew that I was interested in street kids and orphan kids, and she knew that I had volunteered a little bit in Bataan, the Bataan Peninsula, at an orphanage, and she had nothing to lose, so she asked. And so I didn't know what to do. I'm not going to build a project like this. And so I didn't want to be rude. So I said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you show me what we're talking about? So what she did is she took me to the old Lingap Center. And in the dialect, the word Lingap means something like emergency shelter, crisis center, or to help. And what it was, it was an abandoned pig slaughterhouse. And that's exactly what it was a pig slaughterhouse. And what had happened is that they had had water supply problems, so they took the pigs out and they put orphan kids and street children in. Now, it sounds terrible, and it was, but you really have to understand that it did save a lot of lives. But what I found was this was a horrible, horrible, disgusting facility. It was just awful. To get into the front door, which was the door to the kitchen, you had to literally jump across an open sewer. In the facility, the children slept on beds that were made of broken boards, like three or four to a bed on broken boards. I looked in their refrigerator. They had a refrigerator. I opened the door, and there were three Tupperware containers in there. They're about this big and about this deep. And one had chicken, one had pork, one had rice. And I said, now, is this the food for 26 kids? There were 26 there that day. 26 kids for today? And they said, well, no, that's for the rest of the month. And I said, how do the kids eat? Well, they forage. And forage means they go through the neighborhood and steal what they can and do the best they could. The kids were all malnourished. And I found out they weren't allowed to go to school because they couldn't afford uniforms. I guess you can't learn if you don't have a uniform. But worst of all, they weren't even welcomed in the church. But what I also found, and I spent a lot of time there, was that these kids were just like my own kids in all respects. They had dreams, they had hopes, they had wishes, they wanted to be ballerinas, they wanted to be firemen, they wanted to be all the same things that my kids wanted. But the big difference was my kids were going to make it, and these kids had no chance at all. They were at the absolute end of the line. And what I also found, and this may sound silly, but it's true, they had names. These weren't faces on a brochure or in a television commercial. These were real kids. They had names. There was Roger, there was Marmy, there was Eliseo, Marites, John Ryan, Eileen. Well, there was a fellow by the name of Bob Pierce who once said, "Let my heart be broken by the things that break the heart of God." And I have to tell you that on that day, my heart wasn't broken. Not at all. It was shattered. But what can I do? I'm one person. I can't do anything. And so what I did is I thanked the mayor. And I said something really stupid like, I'll have my people call your people, knowing full well that she would never hear from me again. And I got on the airplane, and I came home. And on the way home, I was thinking about this, and I thought, you know, this never happened. This is really ridiculous. I'm going to forget about the whole thing. So it was officially forgotten. So when I got home, whenever I got home from one of my big international trips, Judy would always say to me, she would say, "Well, how was your trip?" And I would always say, "Oh, fine, fine." She'd say, "How did anything happen?" "Nope, nothing." And that's what happened this time. She said, "How was your trip?" "Fine. Anything happen?" "Nope." But what would happen to me was that I would go to bed at night, and I would be remembering these little faces, these young lives with no hope, no future, and no place to go. And I would wake up and I'd be crying. I think it was Mother Teresa, now Saint Teresa, who once said, "God speaks in the silence of the heart, and we listen." So one morning, I woke up and I was crying, and Judy says, "Okay, this has been going on a long time. What's the matter?" And so I told her. I told her about the the children in India that I had seen, where they intentionally put out their eyes so they can be used as a blind children's choir to beg for money. I told her about the kids at the municipal landfill in Manila, where there was a horrible landslide. They estimate maybe 800 were buried alive. And what they do is they find garbage and they cook it on little fires and they call it pog pog. I told her about the little boy at the orphanage I volunteered at in Bataan, where the father had poured gasoline on him and then put the fire out so that he would be deformed and they could use him as a begging prop. And I told her about the Lingap kids. And I told her, you know, Judy, I think I'm being called. But if I'm being called, I've got to come up with a pretty darn good excuse because I am not going to build an orphanage in the Philippines. But one day, God's going to call me before him and he's going to say, John, I was calling you. Why didn't you answer? So I've got to come up with a pretty darn good excuse because this isn't going to happen. So what I did is I sat down and I wrote a very extensive business plan pointing out all of the things, all of the obstacles, and there were many, many. And I said, I'm going to go back to the Philippines and I'm going to prove that this can't be done so that when I get called before God, I can look at him in the eye and I can say, I tried. I said, I'll be home in about 2 weeks. Don't worry about a thing. And then we'll get on with life as we know it. So off I went to the Philippines, and it was with God's grace and guidance and goodwill that all the obstacles were overcome. Everything was overcome. And I'm going to give you three real quick examples. One was the superintendent of schools. I said, why aren't these children allowed to go to school? He said, well, they don't have uniforms, they can't afford school supplies, so no, they can't go to school. So we had what I will call a spirited conversation, and finally, he agreed he would let the Lingap kids go to school. Well, that was really good news for the kids, but for me, that was the wrong answer. Remember, I'm looking for excuses to not do this project. So my next stop was to the parish priest. And I said, Father Raul, I said, tell me, please, what kind of outreach do you have for the Lingap kids? And he said, well, none. Why would you ask? And I said, well, Father, I said, you're a man of the cloth and I'm nobody. But doesn't the Bible mention something about widows and orphans? And he said, and this is a quote, huh, good point. And I said, I want you to bring those kids into the church. And if you will go to the Lingap Center 1 week a month, I will feed any kid who comes. And he says, we'll do you one better. We will bring the kids into the church and we will go to the Lingap Center once a month. And he did. And I said, oh, this is an excuse. I want to get out of this job. So finally, my final one, the big one, this was my get-out-of-jail-free card, was I went to the mayor, and I said, well, Mayor Zambo, I said, all the obstacles were overcome, everything but one big one, and that is that old Lingap Center is so bad, so nasty, that if I burned it to the ground, you would have me arrested for polluting the environment. And since I'm an American, I cannot own land in the Philippines. And so, I'm sorry, I can't do it. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And she says, wait a minute, John, not so fast. We will give you the land. And they did. And I said, oh. So I came home. And Judy said, how was your trip? And I said, oh, fine, fine. Did anything happen? Nope. But the good news is I don't think I'm being called anymore. And she said, well, that's good. I said, no, I think I'm on assignment. So what we're going to do is we're going to build an orphanage in the Philippines. And she said, okay, how are we going to pay for it? And I said, oh, I hadn't thought of that. Maybe we'll sell the house. And she said, okay. Well, we did not have to sell the house. People always ask me that. We did not have to sell the house. but it was certainly on the table. But since that time, we've built a brand new facility which is capable of handling 132 children at a time. All of the kids are in school. Since we opened, We've had 781 children who have gone through the facility receiving some sort of residential care. So far, we have had 42 college graduates. These are street children who are now college graduates and are actively contributing back to the community. With regard to the church, Father Raul was true to his word. He brought the kids into the church. They are now the altar servers. We are the official choir. Our choir is so good, in fact, that in 2016, they were invited to be part of the larger choir that sang at the International Eucharistic Congress in Cebu City. Sadly, it was the first year ever that the Pope couldn't be there, but there were cardinals and bishops and priests from all over the world, thousands of them. And the Lingap kids were in the front row. How is that possible? How is it possible that the outcasts in that community are now the ambassadors of goodwill to the world? It's only possible because we responded to God's call. In November of 2011, remember, I asked him to come to the center and do a children's mass, and if he did, I would feed any kid who came. Well, in 2011, we knew we were going to have a large crowd, and on that day, we had over 5,000 children who showed up, over 5,000, and we fed them all. We knew it was going to be a big one, but it was bigger than we ever imagined, and we fed them all. And someone has said to me, well, my gosh, John, isn't that like the story of the loaves and the fishes? Well, pretty much it was, kind of just like that. Except that the big difference was they had 12 baskets of food left over. We were out. We didn't even have the dishes. They were gone. Everything was gone. They cleaned us out. But how was that possible? That was possible only because we responded to God's call. The Philippines is one of the most typhoon-prone countries in the world. They average 25 typhoons a year. And one year there was a terrible one that hit the island of Luzon, and many, many people died. And the kids heard about it in school. And they came to me and they said, Tito John, we would like to send 3 bags of rice to the flood victims in Luzon. Now, the bags of rice they're talking about are big. They're 100-pound bags, and as you might expect, food is one of our biggest budget items. And so I said, I'm always telling the kids that helping others is the greatest gift you can give to yourself. And they've heard that, and they listened, and they came to me, and they said, well, we want to send this rice. They had formed a little committee that talked to me, and I said, well, I'm sorry, I just can't. I have hardly enough food for you. And they turned around to each other, their little committee, and they said, we knew you'd say that. I knew he'd say that. So don't worry about it, Tito. We will pay for the rice. And I said, okay, how are you kids going to pay for those 3 bags of rice? And they said, we will pay for it by not eating. Now, what do you say to that? I am so blessed. I have everything. I have everything, and then some. And yet these kids who have nothing were more concerned for those less fortunate than themselves. What a lesson I learned. We sent the rice to Manila, and I didn't make the kids pay. But what a lesson I learned. The book of Galatians chapter 6 verse 9 says, and I quote, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. And I'm here to tell you that the kids at the Lingap Center are far better off, far, far better off than they ever dreamed possible because of this project. But the big winner in this whole thing is me. I have reaped a harvest far greater than anything I ever imagine. How is that possible? It's only possible because we responded to God's call. As Father said, this is a mission appeal weekend, and I hope you might consider joining us. And if you're interested, in the baskets in the end of the pews, there's some envelopes. And if you write a check, you should make it out to St. Joseph and just put it in the pew. There will be a second collection after communion. And if you're interested in any more information about us, the Lingap Children's Foundation is a 501c3 organization. And because I believe so strongly in what we're doing, the board of directors and I pay all administrative expenses so that 100% of every penny we receive goes directly to the benefit of the children. On the tables in the narthex, there are some brochures, a few brochures like this. You might want to grab one if you're interested. And I also put out there some letters that look like this. You might want to read the last one. It was written by one of the kids, which you might find to be of interest. And I'd like to close with a little poem that goes like this. I think it sums up my story very well. And it goes like this. On the street I saw a small child, cold and shivering in thin clothes, with little hope of a decent meal. I became angry and I said to God, "Why did you permit this? Why don't you do something about it?" For a while God said nothing. And that night he replied quite suddenly, "I certainly did do something about it. I made you." Thank you all very, very much.